This helps to explain why, in the first quarter of the 20th century, the fast-growing congregations of the Southern Baptist Convention became important nurseries of American fundamentalism. The scriptural crisis surrounding the Civil War had nurtured biblical literalism. The 1890s had seen a re-emphasis on revivalism, and in the decade after World War I, a conservative and biblical counter-reaction to the culture shock of radio, automobiles, short skirts, and the jazz age was unleashed. For the SBC, venting cultural anti-modernism was as comfortable as Br'er Rabbit found the briar patch. Southern Baptists, as we have seen, were front and center in drafting the fundamentals. The 1910 to 1915 compilations that soon gave fundamentalism its name. But if the SBC still prioritized winning souls and sought to eschew political stumping, it did not entirely succeed. The convention was at the fore during the 1920s in promoting prohibition and in helping the anti-evolution movement to convince state legislatures to ban the teaching of Darwinian theory in Oklahoma, Florida, North Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas. Many annals of the 20s hold that Southern fundamentalists and Pentecostals, embarrassed by national ridicule, faded back into Appalachian hollows or coastal piney woods. But as we have seen, they did not retreat in numbers. Their network of seminaries, Bible fellowships, and radio gospel hours expanded, enabling them later to re-enter the national stage with considerable muscle. At mid-century, SBC conservatism, satisfaction with the cultural status quo, well flavored with patriotism and anti-communism, rested comfortably on a theological framework that remained essentially evangelical and mission-minded. From 1940 to 1960, in decades when segregation and civil rights demonstrations were roiling the South, the SBC saw the number of its adherents nearly double from just over 5 million to just under 10 million. The significant expansion brought by these gains in northern and western states will be pursued shortly. These SBC missionary achievements, moreover, took place while more staid northern Baptists, shorn of fundamentalists who split off in the 1930s and again in the 1940s, underwent decline. On racial issues specifically, the SBC of the 1950s cannot fairly be caricatured because in 1954, its Christian Life Commission disregarded political and white congregation sentiment to issue an endorsement of the Supreme Court's Brown v. Board of Education school desegregation decision. Many, if not most, white Southern Baptists would have disagreed, but the SBC colleges and seminaries had an influential progressive element. Still, the interplay of culture, biblical inerrancy, and racial circumstances during the 1960s began to move the SBC toward the aggressive political conservatism it would embrace in 1979 with the election of a new presiding officer and then entrench during the 1980s. For decades, the leadership of the convention, men who eschewed open politicking in favor of bringing converts to Jesus and saving souls, had cut some slack to moderates on social themes to keep the internal peace. The 60s and 70s, however, saw that truce crumble as moderates and liberals in the SBC infrastructure of agencies and commissions pushed increasingly controversial positions. Disagreement over evolution and racial desegregation stood out. Convention theologian Ralph Elliott's book, The Message of Genesis, 1961, doubting the existence of Adam and Eve and questioning Jonah's survival in the whale caused a ruckus. So did the moderate faction's orchestration of the SBC's 1968 statement concerning the crisis in our nation, a call for social action in race relations and anti-poverty efforts, which included a confession of complicity in the injustice done to blacks. To opponents, such controversies got in the way of the SBC's primary mission, spreading the gospel. Not a few conservatives became convinced of the need to regain organizational control. End of Disc 6.